we're continuing in the Maharal, Be'er Agula, and the Maharal had been developing the basis for the rabbinic prohibitions. And he had discussed that just as in the physical world we have different limbs that protect other limbs, so too in the spiritual world we have our responsibility to protect, say, the biblical mitzvot. So that was one type of rabbinic institution, to protect the biblical institutions. And then he went on to discuss that Chazal make institutions, for example, shniot, where the Torah prohibited certain women, that a person may not marry them, may not be intimate with them, and the rabbis came along and extended it. They said it's not only those women, it's another generation. So if the Torah prohibited a mother and a grandmother, the rabbis went and prohibited the next generation as well. So,
you mean the daughter and granddaughter?
Yeah. So now he's going to go the next step. Ordinarily, we think that everything's permitted unless the Torah prohibits it. Fine. What he is now going to develop is the idea that there are certain things that are really against the spirit of the Torah, and it was the rabbis that came and codified it. But it's not that the Torah's approach was, go ahead, yeah, go marry your great-granddaughter, go marry your great-grandmother. No. The Torah, there's what we might call the spirit of the Torah that prohibits it, but the rabbis codified it. And this goes back to a theme that he was really developing from the beginning. If you recall, about a year ago, we were learning the concept of asmachta, where the Maharal had said that the asmachta, we ordinarily think, is a rabbinic institution where the rabbi said you could find an allusion in the Torah to this concept. No, said the Maharal. The Torah really backed the concept, only the Torah didn't obligate the concept. The rabbis came and codified it and showed you how the concept is really a biblical concept. But there were areas where the Torah said, I'm not going to codify it, I'm leaving it for the rabbis for whatever reason and for whatever halachic applications that has. The rabbis will codify it, but I will show you the concept. For example, Netilat Yadayim. So the Torah already indicates the concept, but biblically, either the whole body is tameh or the whole body is tahor. We don't have such a biblical concept as only the hands being defiled. But the Torah does speak about it. The Torah, we have a tradition that the Torah doesn't obligate it, but yet the Torah refers to it. So that, the Maharal had said earlier, is the Torah expressing the concept, but not obligating it. And the rabbis come along and institute it and say, here, you see, it's alluded to in the Torah. Now, the Maharal had made it a blanket statement about asmachtas, and then the Maharal had gone headstrong with the Rambam, where the Rambam is the exact opposite. The Rambam says, no, it's rabbinic, but they're just showing you the brilliance of the verse that you could find allusions for rabbinic institutions. And the truth is, one day we will learn the Pri Megadim. The Pri Megadim in his introduction to Or HaChaim, so the Pri Megadim has this long introduction, really it's a work unto itself. And in that introduction, what he does is he breaks down the Torah into graphs, meaning into charts. And he says, okay, let's analyze what level of mitzvos we have. So you have the Doraisa, and then you have Halacha Moshe Misinai, and you have Svara. And he works his way setting up a chart. Really, he doesn't write it as a chart, but that's what he's doing. What are the levels of mitzvot? And then he has one level of asmachta. Mitzvot that are rabbinic mitzvot, that the rabbi showed an allusion in the Torah, and he breaks it down into two. He says sometimes the asmachta is so overwhelming, it's so indicative of the concept, that's a very powerful asmachta that gives a weight almost like a biblical mitzvah. Then you have other asmachtas like the Rambam. He doesn't tell you Rambam versus Maharal. He just breaks it down into two types of asmachtas. But the Maharal was developing this idea in his way that this is a biblical concept. So here too, what he's going to develop now is this idea that the act is, goes against the spirit of the Torah. The act is sinful, yet the Torah doesn't obligate it yet. The rabbis codified it. And let's see, it's a phenomenal thought, but it's going to take some development, so we're going to have to hear him out.
Is that something like there are things that are permitted on Shabbat, but it's not in the spirit of Shabbat?
Let's see. Let's hear him out and see if that really fits into that concept. It's not exactly the same. Let's see. When you look into this idea of shniot, that the rabbis prohibited certain unions that are not explicit in the Torah, you will find the Gemara brings you four different interpretations, four different sources for this idea of shniot, of that second level of prohibition. One opinion in the Gemara says from the word ha'el. The other one opinion took it, we saw it earlier, from Oznaim LaTorah, Izen V'chiker, that says Shlomo HaMelech made handles to the Torah. So the rabbis understood from that, you have to make a handle, make something that people could grasp the Torah. If you leave everything in its purely biblical state, people won't even have a handle on the biblical state either. People will end up getting confused between a great-grandmother and a grandmother. So that was the second interpretation. The third interpretation was from Pra'eu al Tavobo. The fourth interpretation was Vishamrut Mishmalti. God says, I want you to watch my watching. What does it mean, watch it? It means, when you say watch it, you mean don't hit the limit. Take a step back. That's the rabbinic institution, right? So that's four different interpretations in the Gemara. But each one gave his own source for this idea that the rabbis would make this institution. Because what's fitting is that a person should distance himself from things that are also sin. Notice he calls it sin. It's defined as sin before their institution. And even though you can't say it's as sinful as what the Torah prohibits, a person marries his sister, that's biblically prohibited. That's Yarg Val Yavor. You can't equate it with that. At the end of the day, the Torah doesn't say it. Mikol makom huchet gamken. Nonetheless, it is still a sin. Umipneikach gazu shniot, and that's why they instituted it. Notice the way the Maharal sets it up. It is defined as sin, and that's why they have to say, "Don't do it." Yes.
If the Torah prohibits something, whether in this area or anything else, is that because if it didn't prohibit it, it would be within the nature of man to do it?
So the way the Medrash tells us to view it is that, yes, the Torah is the blueprint. So the Hashem said, based on the Torah, I create man. Our nature falls in line with the Torah. The Torah preceded mankind.
So there would be people within the Torah that would have the proclivity to want to marry their sisters or their mothers.
So that we see from the Talmud that the desire doesn't define what's natural, what's normal. Meaning,
right,
a person can have a desire to marry his mother and daughter even today.
But the Torah comes to prohibit it because of that. If it wasn't, if no one would have that nature, you wouldn't have to prohibit it. If no one wanted to do it, you wouldn't have to say don't do it. And so out of the realm of possibilities.
So you want me to answer you a long answer or a short answer? Long answer. It's Thursday night. Okay, so where do we begin? Let's begin on one end of the spectrum and then end at the other end of the spectrum. Okay, we really need a broad answer here. So we'll begin with the Rambam, just a broader understanding. The Rambam in Shmona Prakim writes, the Rambam wrote 8 chapters to introduce Pirkei Avos, his commentary on Pirkei Avos, and it got the nickname Shmona Prakim, the 8 chapters, like it's its own work. So in those 8 chapters, the Rambam, one of the points the Rambam discusses is, we have a Gemara that says, Al Yomar Adam, a person should not say, I don't feel like eating pork. A person should say, ifshi ve'ifshi, I like it and I like it and I wish I could eat it. But what can I do? The Torah said not to. So the Rambam says, would you say that the more praiseworthy person is he who says, I don't feel like eating pork, or the more praiseworthy person is one who says, I'd love to eat pork, but the Torah says no, so I don't. So the Rambam says the latter. Now what about the prohibition to murder? Would you say the more praiseworthy person is one who says, I don't want to kill, I don't want to steal? Or would you say the more praiseworthy person is he who says, I'd love to kill you, the only reason I'm not killing you now is because the Torah said so? We would think it's better if a person says, no, I don't feel like killing, right? In this case, it's more praiseworthy to say, I wouldn't want to kill. I don't need the Torah to tell me not. Right? So the Rambam says, what's the difference? Says the Rambam, mitzvos that are logical, that we'd expect a logical society should have those mitzvos, like don't steal, don't kill. So in those mitzvos, we admire someone who says, I don't feel like doing it. Mitzvos that are not logical, like don't eat pork, what's the logic in that? We don't know. So there we say, yeah, it's normal that a person would say, I'd love to do it, but the Torah tells me not to. So first, we have that. That's the first discernment. Now, when it comes to relations with one's intimate relatives, one's daughter, one's sister, one's mother, there happens to be a machlokas rishonim. Where does that fall? Is that something which it's obvious no one would want it? Or is it something that, no, if not for the Torah, people would want it? It's a machlokas rishonim. The Ramban says there's no logical reason a person shouldn't want to marry his daughter. The Ramban says the Torah says it. It became a social norm. We call it incest. Logic, you can't explain. Go explain. What's immoral about it? You can't explain. So the Ramban has a whole thing that the Torah knew that because those women are so readily available, it would cause an immoral society, etc. Other Rishonim argue on the Ramban, but you enter the realm of a machlokas Rishonim. Is it natural for a person to say, I'm not interested at all? So the world has laws against it, and Baruch Hashem, that's so. But where does that come from? So the Gemara tells us, based on the Psukim in Zechariah, the question is it immoral because the world adopted the Torah's norms? The world also prohibits polygamy in most places. And you know what? In Arab countries, there's a movement to prohibit marrying cousins, and the Torah permits marrying cousins. Where do you draw the line? So today, they want to draw the line based on genetics. They've proven that there are many more retarded Arabs than other societies, and the reason is because they intermarry all the time within cousins. Happens to be a tradition in my family. In my family, there's a tradition that we don't marry in the family. You don't marry cousins, even though the Torah permits it, because there was someone in the history of the family who married a cousin, and they buried a few of their children. So a relative way back when made an institution, in my family specifically, no one marries their cousins after they suffered that. After they saw these two cousins married, they saw what happened. They made an institution. It's a family minhag. It doesn't exist in any other family. No, first cousins is mutter. Yeah, not only that, a girl is allowed to marry her uncle. Not only cousins, even uncle and niece. An aunt and a nephew is prohibited, an uncle and a niece is permitted. So, where do you draw the line and what's the logic in it? So the pasuk in Zechariah is one of the most difficult prophets, maybe the most difficult prophet, and the pasuk describes that there was a war with wickedness. And we don't know what that pasuk means. So along comes the Gemara in Yuma, and the Gemara tells us that the men of the great assembly decided that they're going to take on wickedness. They're going to take on the evil inclination. They're going to do some Kabbalistic thing together with the prophet Zechariah and capture the desire for idol worship. So that's the Gemara based on the Pesukim in Zechariah. You guys know the story. We did this once when we learned the Pesukim in Zechariah. We opened the Gemara. We learned the whole piece about how they conquered the desire for idol worship. Then they went and said, okay, worked so well, we're going to conquer the desire for promiscuity, for illicit relationships, for adultery, okay. Grab that desire, and the next morning, no chicken laid an egg, and the world came to a standstill. They said, okay, the world can't handle this. Rabbon Shalom, help us undo it. fine, they brought back that desire, but the Gemara says they put some eye shadow on it. They put some cure into its eyes. What did they do? They diminished the desire for one's close relations. And ever since then, the desire for one's own daughter, sister, mother is diminished. It's less common. So where does that leave us in answer to your question? Is it a normal desire? Not a normal desire. Is it within our nature? Is it not within our nature?
Now
it's like more far out. It's something that most people on a standard basis don't desire. But the halacha says in Hilchos Yichud, a person may not stay with his own sister in the same apartment, Yichud, for a prolonged period of time. Your parents are away for a week, that's okay under regular circumstances. If he knows he personally shouldn't, then he shouldn't. But if things are normal, if it's a regular scenario, the halacha doesn't prohibit it. It's going to be, they're going to be in a dorm room together for a semester, prohibit it. Can't do that. Halacha and Shulchan Aruch. Because we don't trust them. Because after a time, the halacha says, it can happen. I don't have a sister. I don't even know what I'm talking about. I don't know what the relationship with the sister is.
But the thing is, I guess, see, in a dorm room, it's a public place. And that, just like Yichud, you don't want to be alone in a place where people might think.
No, I meant any Yichud. I gave that as an example. I meant the dorm room where the door locks, not a public place. I meant a place where they're alone.
But there are people coming and going in the dormitory.
So then that's not Yichud. If they get into the room, it's not Yichud. If they don't enter the room,
the dormitory has 50 rooms.
If it's like a hotel room, I've never been to a dorm. I imagined it was
like
a... Okay, so if the door locks and it's only them, it's Yichud. If not, not. So, you see that it's there's this balance. In certain cases, a son could live with his mother his whole life and there's no problem of Yichud. A father could live with his daughter and there's no problem of Yichud. Brother and sister, not. There's a machlokes achronim. And there was a machlokes, the Stipler, the Stipler was a disciple of the Chazon Ish. When it comes to two men, is that a normal desire or not a normal desire? The Gemara discusses a person who eats vermin. And the Gemara increases, the Gemara teaches us that there are areas in life where a normal person has no desire for it, but every so often he might be interested in experimenting, and coming off of that, a person can develop a taste for it, like smoking. Most people, the first time they smoke, they're not interested. Most people are not interested in eating a worm, but a person might say, I want to drink a tequila. I do want to taste what a worm tastes like. So, and the Gemara says he's not crazy. The Gemara says a person that's going to tell you, I feel like having ants in my sandwich every day, is crazy. But if a person tells you every so often I could have a good ant for lunch with my lunch or a worm or whatever, the Gemara says there exists such a yetzer hara where a person has a yetzer for the weird, the unusual. And on a every so often basis, yeah, that can be within the realm.
And it's not even so weird. There are different societies and cultures where that's the norm.
Oh, okay. So,
grasshoppers and...
Grasshopper is different.
Chocolate-covered ants.
Okay.
People eat dogs in Korea. So every society...
Snails are French.
Yeah,
what?
Snails are French or anything.
Frog legs. And everything, every society is brought up in a different way. And to them, that is what's the norm.
Okay. I hear, to a degree. So coming back to here, as far as that, I think that's on the borderline. Because you see, before the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, it was within the realm. After the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, it's less in the realm. So that's on the border. But the Maharal tells us, sin, it's sin. Chet, it's chet. What the Rabbanon did when they instituted it was they codified it. But the act was still sinful. So that's a phenomenal concept. He's just starting out. But what he's saying is, along the lines of what you said, the Torah came and gave us a guideline for what our nature was before the Torah. As the Medrash Rabbah says, the Gemara says, Avram Avinu kept the Torah out of nature. To Avram it was natural to go the way of the Torah, meaning the Torah came and revealed to us the natural way to live in this world. At first glance, it doesn't seem natural. Why should I eat matzah on Pesach? But if we understood better the nature of the world, then it would even be natural for us to eat matzah on Pesach. But the Gemara calls Avraham Avinu had klayot yo'atzot. What does that mean? That means from within, he was able to see why it was natural to live the Torah lifestyle. You guys with me?
Mm-hmm.
What the Maharal is developing is the next step, that the rabbinic things are also natural. The rabbinic, now that falls in line with the Gemara, that Avraham Avinu also kept the rabbinic institutions. The Gemara says even Erev Tavshilin, right? All the rabbinic institutions. Oh, so that goes very well with this Maharal.
But all of them, as we know them right now?
Oh, so that's another question. Meaning the Maharal has broken down into segments the different rabbinic institutions. Right now, he's telling us the aspect of Chet. If we're going to take it off of the Medrash Rabbah, so the Medrash Rabbah says that even on institutions, even on Takanot, like Eruv Tavshilin, you're right. There's room to discern. Your point is well taken, yes. Really, we should discern between the Takana of Eruv Tavshilin and the Gzera of Shniot. They're two types of rabbinic institutions, you're right. So the Maharal is going one, and the Medrash takes us to the other, which would seem to indicate that it is relatively encompassing. We'll have to take each one as it comes. Umipnei kach gazru shniot ki ha'erva asura b'shvil she'itoiva chamura. So that's why the rabbis prohibited that second level, because, and here the Maharal is taking sides. If we go back to the Machlokas Rishonim, do we say arayos are really something that should be discussed without the Torah, or it's something that the Torah told us it's a chok? Remember the Machlokas Rishonim we discussed earlier? The Maharal says, no, the most disgusting thing in the world, that's a severely disgusting thing, the idea of arayos, and imken hashniya shu pachon mize, eino kasha aval urach bechet. So then the next level doesn't have that severity, it's not that level of disgusting, but it's still within the realms of what we would call chet, what the Torah calls sin. Kadavar shu karov ledavar kasha urach mimenu, something that's almost as hard as something else, so it's softer, aval ei efshar sheye echad chet kasha, vakarov lav lo nechshav chet klal. You can't say this far is the worst sin in the world. You take a step back, oh, that's okay. No, there has to be levels. So one step back is going to be less of a sin, but it's still in the realm of sin. It doesn't go from the most severe to mutar, one step away. So if the level of a mother is one level, the grandmother is there, so then the next level is going to be one step away, but it's not going to be from isu chamur, from a severe sin to mutar. That doesn't make sense. כמו איסור שבת, המלאכה היא חמורה, והשבות שהוא איסור רבנן, הוא גם כן חטא. The Maharal says, let's take Shabbos. You have things that the Torah prohibits. You can't turn on a light. Then you have things that the rabbis prohibit. The things that the rabbis prohibit are one step away, but they're not permitted. And according to the Maharal, in the scope of the Torah, they're called sin before the rabbis prohibited it. And this goes back to your question. This goes back to another concept we were discussing last week. When the Rabbanan instituted something, before the Rabbanan instituted it, did it exist or not? So we brought a list of examples where it existed prior to the rabbinic institution. For example, in Netilat Yadayim, we showed how it existed from the beginning. But initially, pious people did it. And later on, they did it only for Kachim and Truma. And then later on, it developed as something which we do for other foods as well. And we brought the example of going to mikvah for Baal Keri, that we proved that in David HaMelech's time they were doing it. And then it evolved into an institution for the masses. Ve'af she'ino kol kach chamur, v'zeh inyan ma shegazru chachamim. So when it comes to the rabbinic decrees, that's the idea that he says. The rabbinic decrees are ideas that the Torah disapproved of, did not codify, left for the rabbis to codify. And working with this idea, then it's very possible that the Maharal would hold, well, you asked, in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, did they marry their great-grandmother? It would seem from the Maharal that not. He doesn't spell it out, but that's how it would seem.
But also it would appear that, going back to when the Torah was given, in Mitzrayim, one of the things we're told, do not commit the practices of the Egyptians and all the nations that were in the land. They weren't expelled because they had filled their sin. So we see that the nations surrounding Israel did all of these abhorrent practices. Men, the family, everything. I mean, it was a...
society that before the flood. So we see this is in the nature of man to do all of these things.
Again, you're bringing examples from before the men of the Great Assembly. You're bringing examples from before the Second Temple. After the Second Temple is our question. Before the Second Temple, I agree. It definitely seems that way, yeah. Okay, let's do some Avat Chesed before we go for supper.